This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony
D. Oh, good Tuesday to you. We are continuing with the NFC West. We have the Arizona Cardinals on tap today. The Arizona Cardinals in 2021 got off to a 7-0 start. Remember that? And they were the hottest team in the NFL. Remember that? Well, things went sideways and sideways quickly. They went into the playoff game that year against the Rams. Didn't look like they belonged in the game. And then last year was a complete disaster. They lost their last seven. They lost Kyler Murray to injury. This offseason, J.J. Watt said, I'm done. I'm retired. They just cut DeAndre Hopkins. They didn't really make any move in the offseason. So what's in store for 2023? And again, you don't have to go back that far when they were just 7-0 and they were the talk of the NFL. So we'll have their preview today as well as we continue along with this division. But it is amazing to me that just not that long ago when we were talking about how running backs are starting to become almost irrelevant, yesterday where there were two big news about running backs, as Dalvin Cook has decided that it's going to be the Jets, not the Miami Dolphins, that he's going to play for. He is agreeing to a one-year deal with the Jets worth up to $8.6 million. A lot of incentive in there and whatnot. I think it's a $6 million base with a bunch of other incentives. But nevertheless, he's going to join a backfield with Breece Hall once Hall comes back. Remember, he had ACL surgery. And so when he comes back, this is the dynamic duo that is going to be behind Aaron Rodgers in a very, very loaded Jets offense. It's not only Rodgers, but you're talking Garrett Wilson, who was there last year. Again, Hall, who was tearing it up before he got hurt. Then you add Alan Lazard. You've got now Dalvin Cook. So this offense is absolutely loaded. And Cook, again, was just getting expensive. Saw his production go a little downward. His blocking didn't do him any favors last year in Minnesota. Still relatively young, is at 28 years old. So still could be a very, very productive running back. But let's not get all too, big on Dalvin Cook's arrival with the Jets. When Breece Hall is back and healthy, that's his backfield. So we'll see how the Jets play it with Dalvin Cook. But everybody's watching whether or not he would go to Miami, his hometown, or he would go to the Jets. And I honestly think this is Aaron Rodgers. This is what Aaron Rodgers does. And we see this a lot of times when it comes to these kind of signings, is it does matter who you're playing with. Remember that Aaron Rodgers took a pay cut so that they could afford a player like Dalvin Cook, so that they can add to what he wants in the next couple of years of his career while he is with the Jets. And also remember, because Dalvin Cook played for the Minnesota Vikings, he had two games a year in which he could watch on the other side exactly who Aaron Rodgers was, right in person. He saw it twice a year while he was in Minnesota. So there is a feeling that Aaron Rodgers is the one that sort of drew this in, that maybe going to Miami and playing for a loaded team down there and being in his hometown just wasn't quite enough. And maybe the Dolphins couldn't work out the kind of money that he was looking for. The other signing was Ezekiel Elliott. Not as big as Dalvin Cook, but nevertheless notable given who Ezekiel Elliott is. He's going to be in the backfield with Ramondre Stevenson with the New England Patriots, agreeing to a one-year deal there. Again, I don't think this is earth-shattering, but it could mean what the Patriots want to do is maybe run the ball a little bit more. You're not going to get the Ezekiel Elliott that's the everyday back. You're going to get the Ezekiel Elliott that Dallas utilized last year, which was a guy that per touch wasn't an explosive runner anymore. But closer to the goal line, that's where he was effective. He's also a very good pass blocker out of the backfield, so that could really help the Patriots out a lot. But it didn't break the bank. It's a signing that, Patriots could just give it a shot for 1 year and see what happens. But two big running back signings yesterday. And again, it's amazing to me how this is just my observation on this, because it's been since last night into today. It's amazing to me how this NFL will go, yeah, running backs, we can just find them anywhere. There's no need to worry about running backs. Like, why do we even want to pay them $15 million a year? And that's sort of the idea when we talked about running backs getting deals and Jonathan Taylor's all upset what's going on in Indianapolis. Then you've got Josh Jacobs holding out in Las Vegas, and Saquon Barkley gets a worked deal with his franchise tag tender, but he's not getting a long-term deal as of right now. Neither did Tony Pollard. And all of a sudden, two signings yesterday are acting acting as if the Jets have now won the AFC East based on what? The signing of a running back. Right now, you may argue, and you could, and make success, you could make a successful argument on this, that in the end, it is an addition to everything that they have. Right? Fine, I can agree with that. But remember, the Jets just didn't sign a running back. They didn't go get a guy that didn't have any resume whatsoever. They didn't pick a rookie. They didn't get an undrafted free agent. Like they went out and got Dalvin Cook, a 28-year-old Pro Bowler, and now everyone is like, oh, look at this. The Jets probably will win the division now. A very impossible division, a loaded division. And the Jets are, and some people have the Jets favored now to win it. They didn't have the Jets favored to win it yesterday. And now Dalvin Cook is the added piece that could put them over the Bills and the Dolphins. It does show a little bit of value, right? Maybe not tremendous. Maybe not like what it was back 30 years ago, but it does show you that this position does have some importance. It isn't just somebody running the football, right? Dalvin Cook had some good production last year for Minnesota. He was going to cost them some money, and they felt like they could go in another direction. That's fine. Organizations are doing that. But the Jets are finding at least some value. $8.6 million is not $15 million a year on a long-term deal. But there is an emotion today out of the New York media that the Jets have hit a home run. With what? A running back. So I'm not going to kill the position outright, because I still think that if you're a Jets fan, today is a brighter day than it was yesterday. And yesterday, you still had Aaron Rodgers. It's same thing in New England. Again, I don't think in New England this allows them to be competitive. But it's another element to their offense. Right, Ezekiel Elliott can put the ball in the end zone when you get him close. Right? Like, he's not going to run a 50-yard touchdown. But when you get inside the red zone, Ezekiel Elliott is very effective. And like I said, he's a good pass blocker too. So these are some elements that the Patriots are going to need. But I like both of these deals because they're 1 year. Give it a try. See what happens. It doesn't cost them a ton of money. And for the Jets, it's exactly what Aaron Rodgers wanted. This is exactly why Rodgers took the $35 million pay cut and said, look, we'll rework it, but I want to bring in players like this. I know Dalvin Cook too. Right? He saw me, I saw him. I'd like to add him to this arsenal, especially when we get Breece Hall back from the ACL injury from last season. So the Jets, we knew were loaded going into this, are even loaded more. But again, that division is so fun. It's going to be a blast to watch this season. It really is. It really is. And again, if I'm a Jets fan, this is probably the most excited I've ever been in my entire existence, ever, since Joe Namath was throwing the football. I've never seen the Jets do anything like this before. They've always been kind of the joke. They don't have enough. They draft the wrong people. And now they've went out and got a player that other players want to play for. And that's the other takeaway from this. When you get Aaron Rodgers, you get people that want to be with Aaron Rodgers.
I'll say there's one other takeaway, too, because all offseason, ever since it was announced that Minnesota wasn't going to bring Cook back, we've been pegging the Dolphins.
Yeah.
Where Cook was going to go. And now Jets have, you know, already won that battle.
That to me, there's possible financial reasons for that, but it is surprising that he got a warm reception from the Jets fans when he showed up at training camp, but Miami was his home. I kind of thought he would get the same thing there and feeling like he wanted to go there. And maybe it just came down to dollars, but it also may come down to, listen, I have a chance to play with Aaron Rodgers, man. And I'm going to do it.
Played against him twice a year.
Twice a year played against him, yeah.
Every year for his career so far. So why not join? Can't beat him, join him, right?
And that's the other thing, too. I mean, a lot of people don't understand this. Like, these players, they're not watching the Sunday ticket. You know what I mean? They're not watching Red Zone. Like, they know who's in the league, and they see who's in the league, and they're watching tape. But they don't watch their fellow competitors in the NFL all year long. They can't. They're prepping for a game. They're at a game. Right, so what they know is who they're interacting with. They know people that come into the team, people who leave the team, the tape that they see. Like they know the league, but they're not like us. Like, we see Aaron Rodgers every week. You know, we watch Aaron Rodgers play every week. We see almost every play he makes every week. Dalvin Cook is spending his week watching tape on who he's playing, the defense of who he's playing, and then who he's playing on Sunday. He's not sitting around like watching multiple channels and got everything on. That's why Monday Night Football is a big deal, because it's the one time players actually can watch a game and settle in and go, oh, all right, I'll watch. Like, even Thursday nights, I've had NFL guys tell me, I can't watch Thursday Night Football. I'm still watching tape. Like, I'm still watching film of what I've got. And when I'm not doing that, I want to get away from it. But Monday night is when they all watch. So Dalvin Cook, right, has seen Aaron Rodgers. He's seen how Randall Cobb and all those players over the years have worked with Aaron Rodgers. And now he's like, I can do that here in New York. I can go to New York and do this. And Rodgers is a salesman. He's been selling New York. You can tell in these like Hard Knocks how much he loves the city and excited for the city. And there is a spring in his step. I'm sure when he had a chance, if he had a chance to say anything to Dalvin Cook, it was, this is going to be great. Like, this is going to be special. And I want to do everything I possibly can to be a winner here. Yeah. But if he had gone to Miami and helped them win a Super Bowl, that's helping the hometown team. So, yeah, $8.6 million. And then, Ezekiel Elliott, I knew would land somewhere. I didn't, hobbling around on two bad feet. He was going to land somewhere. And the Patriots, he went to the camp and, saw the training camp, and then he signed.
But it's amazing, a far cry from when he was holding out, which that holdout seems like it was 3 years. It was about 3 years ago, right?
It was longer. Exactly.
But, now it's just like, hey, you get what you get.
All right, Arizona Cardinals are the team we're focusing on today. We'll talk about them coming up. Also, more NFL news. Lots and lots of stuff going on around the league. And then we'll get back into the James Harden situation, as that has gotten a little bit more dissected since his rant in China about Daryl Morey. We all got that coming up in Hour 1 as we continue. It's Wake Up Call.
Listening to Wake Up Call on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. It is Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio. Hit us up on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, that's Ron with two N's, or X, if you want to call it that, the new name for Twitter. Arizona Cardinals preview team today. We got to do the good, we got to do the bad. Arizona, this looks really bad. Again, as I mentioned earlier, 7-0 in 2021. They were the hottest team in the NFL. Remember, it was so much fun. Kyler Murray and the Cardinals and Cliff Kingsbury, they were undefeated. And then they kind of, tapered off a little bit and not playing particularly well. And Murray was dealing with a bad shoulder. And then they went to the playoff game against the Rams. That was the year the Rams went to the Super Bowl. And they looked lost. Murray looked completely lost. I mean, it was just a bad performance, really bad performance. But, sometimes you get those, right? So there was really like, okay, but they were 7-0, and there were things to like about the team. But last year was a mess. They were 4-8. They were playing the Patriots. Murray tore his ACL. He was done. And then they lost the final seven games of the season. J.J. Watt retired. Cliff Kingsbury got fired. Steve Keim, the general manager, was put on a leave of absence for a health-related issue. Then he left the organization. Jonathan Gannon, defensive coordinator for the Philadelphia Eagles, was hired as head coach. It does not look like this team is going to be a competitive team this upcoming season. So what does that mean? Could they be in the market for a new quarterback and Caleb Williams? That's kind of the feeling. But it's DeAndre Hopkins wanted to trade. They couldn't trade him. Then they just released him. They took $22 million in dead cap hit. I mean, it's just when it spirals out of control, sometimes it spirals out of control. And that seemed to what happened to Arizona since that 7-0 start. They've really, really fallen back. They have not won a championship since 1947 in their St. Louis days. They did appear in the Super Bowl against the Steelers with Kurt Warner that year. But again, this is a team that I really liked a couple of years ago. We kept wondering. It was kind of a weird season in 2021 because they were 7-0. We were like, are we buying it yet? Like, are we buying this? Like, are we buying Kyler Murray? And this, like, 7-0 is 7-0. And you are what your record is, but like, are we really buying it yet? Like, it was hard to put them in the top part of the top five.
Yeah.
Because like, they weren't Patrick Mahomes.
They weren't.
I don't think we did.
I mean, if they did, it was like a quick little blip and then they were demoted.
Yeah, exactly.
We might have put a two-loss Chiefs team in over the undefeated Cardinals.
It's sad because this is what happened. This is what can happen to you in the NFL. I mean, again, think about this. It's like the first a little less than half of the season, 7-0. They don't finish strong. They don't show up in that playoff loss to the Rams. And now they're one of the worst teams in the NFL. They're going into this season considered one of the worst teams in the NFL. That's how fast it can fall. But it also can be quick. You can turn around things quick. But it really, enjoy it when it's good, because it can fall apart really, really quickly as injuries, you know, pile up, players come and go. You don't do well with the money. You don't do well with the cap. You can't get value for players that are leaving your organization for other teams. That's what can happen. And also, especially when you're sitting on a ton of money and you don't do a lot during the offseason, and then Arizona didn't do very much, didn't do well in the offseason. So it's a situation where they've got a quarterback in Kyler Murray that is going to be a big cap hit to them next season. Is it possible they go in another direction? Is it possible? Well, they did with Josh Rosen. Remember that? Josh Rosen was a first-round pick, but then when they had the number one overall pick, they found a better option in Kyler Murray. If they get the number one pick overall, do they go, well, why not go back? Let's go with another quarterback. Let's try this again. I don't know. You know, it's not just the ACL injury for Murray. He just really hasn't played all that well since getting his big, huge $230 million contract. So this is one of those teams where it's going to be not rosy, although there are a couple of things I guess you could point to. I never know with a coach. You know, I'll give him that. I never know with a new coach. I mean, Sean McVay had to come from somewhere, right? I mean, Kevin O'Connell had a really good season in his rookie experiment with the Minnesota Vikings. Maybe Jonathan Gannon has been ready for this his whole life. Maybe he's like, all right, I've got the opportunity. I've got the reins. I'm a diamond in the rough. Maybe that's the case. I have no idea. But it's definitely not one of the teams that we've talked about, we're going to be talking about as a team that's going to be running for this division. The Rams are the same way. I mean, yesterday we did the Rams with Travis Rogers out of ESPN LA. It's the same kind of thing. If you want to talk 7 wins for the Rams, 6 wins for the Rams, it's probably about right. You know, it's a team that, again, we use that phrase, cashed in their chips, the bill is due, and they're probably not going to win 10 games this season. So the other two teams that we'll have this week, the San Francisco 49ers, the team that played in the NFC title game last year and could have won it if Brock Purdy didn't get hurt. And then there's the Seattle Seahawks, probably the more fun surprise team of the NFL. Look, I always say that there's teams we root for, and then there are teams like we root for. Like there are teams that you're a fan of, that you live and die with, and then there are good stories that you kind of go, yeah, I got nothing to do with that team or the division, or sometimes not even the conference, but that's a pretty good story. The Seahawks were a pretty good story. Geno Smith out-dueling, you know, Russell Wilson in week 1 and keeping that going all season long where they made the playoffs. And they played really well against the 49ers in their playoff game. It wasn't enough to win, but it was a decent enough showing. But these other two teams have got a lot of work to do, including the Arizona Cardinals. So, again, the big news yesterday, Dalvin Cook with the Jets and Ezekiel Elliott with the Patriots. That's like, it's not 1A, 1B. It's like 1A and like 2D.
3B?
Yeah, 3B maybe. Like one is a signing where you go, okay, this may have changed the game in the division. The other one is, hey, it's a nice addition. Let's see what happens. Well, let's see what he does.
I mean, you know, Ezekiel Elliott to me now has become Jerome Bettis.
Yeah.
You know, five yards.
Goal line player. Yeah,
5 yards out.
Yeah.
From the goal line and just,
completely,
you know, punching it. Maybe, you know, it's like, hey, we need 1 yard for a first down type play. I mean, that's, I don't know. It's so amazing how quickly his stock dropped.
Yeah, really much. Really, really. It's crazy when you get to a certain age and you get to too many miles on your tires.
Yeah.
You know, it's 7 years in Dallas. 7 years for a running back is like 11, 12 years for a quarterback, right? I mean, 7 years is a long time to be carrying a football in the National Football
League.
Even
if he had
and staying like super productive.
Yeah, even if he had like a 10-game break.
Yeah, right. Even if he did,
one of the seasons.
Even if he did, it's still a lot. By the way, Zach Martin has got a new deal. So the Pro Bowl right guard for the Dallas Cowboys will be returning to camp. He signed a deal that will guarantee him $36 million over the next 2 seasons. This was a big, big deal. This was a major deal. He was dramatically underpaid for the value of that position. The Cowboys knew it, and even though he held out for a good chunk of time before this was done, Dallas always said, look, we will be working out a deal with Zach Martin. We will be coming to the table with Zach Martin. He was making $7 million a year in a position that pays like $17, $15, $20 million a year. Quentin Nelson got $20 million a year. Zach Martin deserves $20 million a year, right? I mean, that's crazy. I mean, he deserves that. But this was not anger. This was not bitterness. This was a guy saying, the market has shifted. The position now demands this. I'd like to work a deal with that. And the Cowboys even agreed with that. They said, great, you got this. The deal you have is no longer really worth the value that you have. But he was getting fined 50 grand a day. So it did take a while, which, by the way, 50 grand a day is not a lot of money, but it is money. It is still, it still adds up over time. I mean, if you are out 5 days of camp, that's $250,000. That's not nothing, even if you're making $20 million a year after you divvy it up with everybody. So that was a that's a big hefty holdout, but nevertheless he did get paid, and it was the right move for the Dallas Cowboys. By the way, Zach Martin was the player that you kind of get reminded of this in the Johnny Manziel documentary. Is Zach Martin was the player that the Cowboys drafted instead of Johnny Manziel? Remember the 2014 draft when everyone was wondering where Johnny Manziel was going to go, and then everyone said Dallas, Jerry Jones loves him. And I remember everyone was making jokes like Jerry had Johnny Manziel's name on a piece of paper and was like running to the podium, but like Steven tackled him and dragged him to the ground. Like people were making jokes that Jerry wanted him so bad he really had to be talked out of it. And the guy that they drafted, the player that they drafted, was Zach Martin. And this guy's a Hall of Famer. I mean, this guy played the position of right guard. He's one of the top players at that position ever. I mean, he's unbelievable. He's made the Pro Bowl's first year, right? 6 times in his career he's made the Pro Bowl. That's the third most in franchise history. So, yeah, there's no question. Zach Martin deserves not only the money that he got, but the accolades that he's got. Yeah, they said Randy White and Bob Lilly, they made 7 Pro Bowls. Zach Martin is a 6-time Pro Bowl, and I'm seriously, he's heading to Canton, Ohio as soon as he retires.
Yeah.
So they made the right decision. They didn't go with sloppy, not watching any tape Johnny Manziel, and instead went with a right guard that is one of the best.
I want to hope that the Steven Jones tackling Jerry is a true story.
I want that to be true as well.
I mean, you know, they sit down at Thanksgiving. Steven go, hey, yeah. Johnny, I'm glad you passed on Johnny.
Yeah, no, there was serious news. Like Jerry wanted Manziel so bad, and they were talking him down off that tree and. No, Jerry, you don't want this. You don't want this. That's Zach Martin. Coming up, a story that may not exactly have been as true as we thought. That's coming up next. It's Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsNet Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us on Twitter or X, either way, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, that's Ron
Twitter.
With 2 N's. I'm just going to say Twitter. I'm Twitter. Not going to do this. I'm not playing your reindeer games, Elon Musk.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Companies
try to rebrand, and you're like, no, it's this.
There's been a story floating around. I keep flirting with it, whether or not to put the good, the bad, the dumb, but it's just, I mean, it's beyond dumb. It's stupid. The whole thing with, you know, the fight between Elon Musk and Mark Zuckerberg.
I have zero interest in seeing this.
Exactly. Well, I mean, it's completely called off now.
No, they did call it off?
Yeah. Well, Mark Zuckerberg, I guess, completely called it off, even though he is in more fighting shape than Elon Musk, according to experts.
Oh, well.
I don't even know what
that means. I know these are two of the more influential people in my lifetime. Like,
lifetime.
When I'm done. Well, I got to be honest with you. Probably my lifetime.
You think so?
Zuckerberg's Facebook changed everything.
Yeah.
Right? Changed. Listen, we don't do high school reunions anymore because because of this. Like, literally, you don't have to make a phone call to your aunt to let her know everything that's going on in your life. You don't even have to write the Christmas letter that you write to all your relatives explaining what's going on. You don't have to do anything. He changed it forever. I mean, he changed the way we interact with people forever. If you use that platform, like my brother doesn't use it at all, which is I'm blown away.
There are some people who never use it,
but for most people who do. And what I have found interesting about Facebook is, like my mother and father, for example, they were on it. Now they're not on it, but they would. I remember the early part of it. I remember my mother going, "I'm not getting on that thing. No way. I'm not going to let people don't need to know my business. But before you know it, you can't help it. You start you got people got attracted to it. Then they were on it posting pictures of things that they were doing. Now they're not. They lost interest in it. But that's what happens in an older generation. So he changed communications. Musk, I don't drive a Tesla. I don't drive an electric car. But the space stuff, the things he's doing, he could end up being one of the most influential people on the globe with what he's doing. Like, I don't know what the space stuff is going to do, but some of his technology could be changing the lives of people.
AI.
AI.
He's on the forefront of AI. So, he's also constantly warning us of AI. So
yeah. So these
I don't know which side of the fence he's really on.
But I couldn't care. Get in a ring. I don't care. I'm not going to watch.
No.
I have no interest in them fighting. It's ridiculous. I
had a guy the other day ask me, he's like, so did you watch the Paul fight? I'm like, no, because they're destroying boxing.
Yeah.
I mean, when the Paul brothers are fighting and that's the big ticket fight of the year, it's letting me know that boxing is dead.
Is he legitimate? I'm not as much into the boxing world as I want, but I've had people say like he's like really good. Like it's not a celebrity. It's not Tonya Harding getting
in the ring. Well, one of them, I don't know who's who, but one of them went to wrestling.
Yeah.
The entertainment type. And the other one keeps doing boxing matches against MMA fighters.
Gotcha. Okay.
Which is stupid because they don't know how to box.
Right.
But you know for a fact that if Elon Musk and Mark Zuckerberg fought, they would have been the pay-per-view event of this year.
Yeah. Well, remember when Conor McGregor fought Floyd Mayweather?
Yes.
People were surprised he lasted as long as he did. They're like, he's not a boxer. He's a different fighter.
Yeah.
Like, why would he agree to boxing?
It's like, whatever happened to, two heavyweights.
Right. I know.
It's
I know.
Dead.
It's, sport it's is sad, dead. Too, because that, I mean, listen, I'm not, I didn't grow, like, I grew up in the 70s as a little kid. But I didn't grow up in the 70s, meaning I was cognizantly aware of what was going on.
Yeah.
But, like, watching video.
Hey, we had good
like,
fights in the 80s.
Well, yeah, but in the Muhammad Ali rumble in the jungle, like, the thriller in Manila, like, these fights with Foreman and Holmes, like, they were the biggest thing in sports. Like, this was a global event. Like, these were everybody around the world, everyone watched. Like, you had, like, when Muhammad Ali was in Zaire, like, they came out to see him. Like, they were screaming and hollering at him and just rallying around him. And just the feelings of the largeness of the event, you couldn't duplicate on any level. Like, it was impossible to duplicate what the globe was feeling about two men getting into a ring. It was a major, major global deal. And now it doesn't feel that way at all. It doesn't have that same feeling.
It
doesn't feel like when the heavyweight title is up for grabs, where everyone stops what they're doing.
Question for you, because when the year 2000 came around, right, and they were doing like most influential people on the planet, blah, blah, yeah. blah. And they did, top 100 sports figures of all time. Muhammad Ali, almost across the board, was number one.
Depending on what ranking you saw, because Sports Century had Michael Jordan.
Well, yeah, but it was always like one or two, right? But for the 20th century. Would a boxer even crack the top 100?
For the
21st century? That's where we're in, right?
Yeah.
We're in the 21st
century. Maybe Muhammad Ali being, he was kind of a different kind of fighter. He was so charismatic and controversial. But it was like he... It was because of what he was obtaining and who he was that allowed to be on lists like that. Like, if he was a boxer that never won a heavyweight title, he would not be on the list. Because he won a heavyweight title, he's on the list. So you can have all the personality and characteristics that you want, but you can't be on the top five influential athletes of all time if you're not heavyweight champion of the world.
Equally successful, ran in the same circles. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is a big deal, but he's not on the same level as Muhammad Ali.
Yeah.
And they were standing shoulder to shoulder, fighting against Vietnam, fighting for civil rights. I mean, they were right there next to each other.
There are two stories about Muhammad Ali that I remember specifically that just made me sort of pause and reflect on the largeness of him. And a lot of it had to do with the fact that when I was in high school, I remember a science teacher, of all things, not even like a history teacher, a science teacher said that Muhammad Ali was the most recognized non-political figure on the face of the earth. And I didn't take that as gospel or anything, but I was kind of thinking, it's probably true. It's probably true. Like the Pope or president of the country or, president of the United States, whatever. But Muhammad Ali was the most recognized athlete, personality, entertainment figure on the globe. You couldn't go anywhere without people not knowing who he was. But there were two stories that I remember. One was a story where Muhammad Ali in his later years was at an event and somebody was sitting next to him and he took a glass and he put it the glass on top of a piece of paper and he drew a circle around the glass and then he started drawing all of the continents on the glass like a globe, making it a globe. And then he said to the guy next to him, "I was the champion of all this." And I remember like that like hit me for some reason. But the other story about how unbelievably big that he was, larger, I really can't imagine another global athlete being on this level. Like maybe soccer players are on this level. They are. I mean, Lionel Messi and Ronaldo and all those guys are. But
yeah,
Muhammad Ali, there was a story of a kid in the hospital and Muhammad Ali went to go see him and he had cancer. And he was trying to encourage the little boy to sort of beat cancer. You know, he was fighting George Foreman. He said, I'll fight George Foreman and you're going to beat cancer. I'm going to fight. You're going to beat cancer. The little boy had like big eyes and he looked up at Muhammad Ali with a big smile. And later on, the kid got worse. He was getting worse and worse. And Muhammad Ali went to go visit him again. And he was a little boy, you know, not like a teenager, like an 8-year-old, 9-year-old boy. And he was really in bad shape. And when Muhammad Ali walked in there, he saw he was in really, really bad shape. But he kept encouraging him. You know, he said, I beat George Foreman and you're going to beat cancer. I beat George Foreman and you're going to beat cancer. And the little boy looked up at Muhammad Ali and he said, "No, champ, I'm going to go meet God. And when I do, I'm going to tell him I know you." Like, that's how big Muhammad Ali was. That a little boy felt like when he met the creator of the universe, he was going to brag to the creator of the universe that he knew Muhammad Ali. Like, that's how big he was. And so where do we get that again? Where do we get an athlete that could do that on a where everybody now is famous? Like, everybody now can be famous. It does not take much at all to have 100,000 Instagram followers. You do one thing and you can wake up and your phone's exploding.
Or make one comment.
Right? One, you can do anything. Like, you can be famous for any reason whatsoever. I read a story yesterday about this sorority girl on Alabama Rush or Rush Alabama, this TikTok show about rushing sororities at the University of Alabama. And I guess she does videos and they exploded overnight. She went from being nobody knew who she was to brand deals trying to get a hold of her within a week because of these videos. Like, you can be famous for any reason at any time. It can come dramatically and you can stay there for a bit if you produce content. Where do we get a guy where he's not just famous for being an athlete? He's not just famous because we like what he does or she does. They're not just famous because we go to their movies or we listen to their songs or we where do we get the athlete that is so high that a little boy is like, "I can't wait to tell God I know you. Like, I can't wait to tell God that I met you." Like, soccer players, I think, are the closest.
I think you hit the nail on the head with Messi and Ronaldo. I think those are the two figures right now that are near that level. I can't say they're on the same level, but they're near that level.
Yeah. Because in order to be relevant to the globe, you have to matter to the globe.
Right.
You have to play a sport that people around the globe are interested in and follow and are emotionally attached to. You can be an NBA star. NBA is a global thing. But if you play baseball, they might not know who you are in Italy or France on that level where you are stopping traffic and people don't know what they're doing. All right, we got to get to this next story about something that we all might have believed, but ended up not being as true as we thought. That's next as we continue with Wake Up Call.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, as we continue, good Tuesday to you. Arizona Cardinals, the team we're featuring today. Again, it's NFC West Week. Ed Smith, former tight end, will join us, host of Easy Sports Talk. That Saturday is right here on Sports Map Radio from 1 to 3 p.m. He'll join us to talk about the Arizona Cardinals. All right, so this story is blowing up. So remember the 2009 movie The Blind Side? That talked about the life of Michael Orr, the former Baltimore Raven.
You mean that heartwarming tale of a high school student down on his luck, given just that opportunity he needed?
Sean and Leanne Toohey adopting Michael Moore, getting him to understand football, giving him a home and a family, putting him on the path to NFL greatness.
Just giving him a bed. Remember that scene?
That's right. Remember giving him a bed?
Never had one before. What, a room to yourself? No, a bed.
So Michael Moore went on to make, you know, a lot of money in the National Football League.
Won a Super Bowl.
That's right. And Sandra Bullock won an Oscar for her role as Leanne Toohey in The Blind Side. Well, apparently, according to Michael Orr, this is all baloney, and he's actually kind of ticked off at the Tuohys because he feels like they defrauded him out of the millions of dollars he was owed for this movie. So he says that he was never adopted, that instead it was like a conservatorship, kind of like what Britney Spears' dad and her were arguing about, if you remember that. So there wasn't an official adoption. It just meant that they could handle his business. And so they handled his business by making deals with the agency that was in charge of the movie. And that gave him not only the money up front for the movie, I think $250,000, but everyone in the family got a cut of the movie's profits, which grossed over $300 million. So everybody in the Toohey family, again, according to Michael Orr,
not everyone in the family,
has made millions of dollars except for him. So the... This is now, listen, the cracks in this story started appearing way before this, right? So he actually had been on a little bit of a, guys, it's a movie. They really stretched the truth on a lot of this. And most of us buy into that. Of course, you never make a movie. I don't think there's ever been a movie where it's the story is completely and utterly true. Everyone takes license with the story. That's why you can say based on a true story rather than true story. You can just sort of, you know, create some dialogue that didn't happen, create some conflict that didn't happen, create an enemy, create somebody to overcome. Like you can add a little element to it.
Are you trying to tell me that in the movie Tombstone, when Wyatt Earp is walking across the water to kill Curly Bill, and all those bullets are flying across him, he didn't get hit once?
Yeah, I guess so.
You mean that's not true?
Yeah. Titanic. Remember, Titanic had that problem. Remember the they based a real life person.
Don't do it.
They based one of the real life officers on the ship on a real life person, and then they showed him taking a bribe and then shooting himself in the head. And when in reality, every single witness that had survived that said he was actively putting people on the boat. He was actively right to the very end getting people to safety. So James Cameron was like, nah, the guy on the boat who knew he wasn't going to be on the lifeboat was taking money for what, the afterlife? Like James Cameron was just like, nah, let me just throw that in there because this, in the end, it's not about this boat sinking. It's about a love story.
Right.
Right. So that's what happens in these movies.
Yeah, in the end, we never talk about, you know, whether it hit the iceberg. We always talk about like, no, there's enough room on the door.
That's right. Or has been doing this for a number of years. He has said, listen, I wasn't dumb. I wasn't like illiterate. I wasn't, you know, yeah, I bounced around. I was in foster care. I bounced around from school to school. But I was actually smart. I was actually a pretty good student. And, oh, by the way, the Toohey's didn't teach me football. I've been studying football on my own. Like he's been pecking apart this movie for years. But he did say later, I could have torn the whole thing down, but he didn't want to tear the whole thing down because he felt like there was an upbeat message in the movie that sort of overrode his desire for his story to be truthfully told.
Yeah, I could see that.
You know, where he said, listen, I played in the NFL. I got my goals. I made money. But so why now? Why today? Well, he was looking into some documents about the Toohey's conservatorship. And started realizing that he was tricked when he was young. He says he was tricked. That they told him that a conservatorship and an adoption are the exact same thing. But they are not the exact same thing. But he was told that. So he was signing documents in which he thought he was going to be a member of this family, thus entitled to the profit cut of this movie. But instead, they angled it so that basically they got his story, but they didn't have to give him a cut of the money. Now, again, the Toohey's have not made any comments about this. This is all Michael Orr's accusations. But it's almost kind of sad because I can live with the fact that, okay, The Blind Side isn't a completely true story. But I kind of thought that the Tuohys and Michael Orr, while they kind of let Hollywood doll this up a little bit, in the end, they still were a family. I had no idea they weren't. He was on the outs with them. Like, I had no idea that, like, he actually is kind of upset and angry with them and got taken advantage of. That's the one thing I'm like, oh, okay. I mean, again, I can live with, you know, 70% of the movie being somewhat exaggerated. That's fine. It's a movie. All right. It's supposed to entertain right. and inform you a little bit. I don't need a, I mean, most people's true lives are boring, right? If you, it's really not as dramatic as people make it out to be.
But you know, I'm reading Wikipedia and you know, I never know if Wikipedia is 100% factual or not, but the fact, you know, because you had brought up the fact that, you know, Michael Orr said, it's like, I know football, right? Well, he was actually recruited by Hugh Freeze.
Yeah.
That was his high school coach to go to Briarcrest Christian School. When he was the 2003 Lineman of the Year, and then in 2004, the Tuohys came looking.
Right, right. So it made it out to be like, Michael, you're a big person.
Yep.
You know, have you ever thought about football? What's football? Oh, let me explain all of football to you.
Right.
That did not happen.
I was taking him home, coach.
That did not happen. What he's saying is this. What he's saying is he was starting to make a name for himself on the high school football field, right? And that the Tuohys realizing that what he said was, look, I was in foster care, and to be honest with you, I got to this Christian academy school. I was playing football there, but he said I would live with students. Like, I would stay overnight at students' houses.
Yeah.
I didn't really have a home. And the Tuohys saw that, and I was friends with the son, and they saw an opportunity because they saw how my profile was rising through the high school ranks. And so he's alleging that they took advantage. Like, they saw, hey, there's an opportunity. This guy could play in the NFL, and like, there could be a story here. And then he said that he's basically accusing them of plotting the whole thing. Like, seeing the big picture before he could see the big picture.
But you look at it, it's like, you can't help but look at the fact that they took advantage of this.
Yeah, really.
I mean, all of a sudden, like, he gets to this high school. He's freshman of the year. He's the lineman, offensive lineman of the year for that district. And then they come knocking on the door like, hey, come on in, Big Mike. Which I guess is that's also a fake name. He was never called Big Mike.
I would I would say to him, I would ask the Tuohys this. Like, look, okay, maybe some, like, again, you didn't teach him football. Okay, fine, whatever. You weren't the only family that gave him a home. You weren't the first family to introduce him to a bed. A lot of that stuff is nonsense. I'm okay with that. I would simply go, what you claim in your book that you split the money five ways, right? Between your two kids, you two, and him. He's claiming he never got a. That seems like something we could figure out. Like, that seems like something somebody with doing some accounting could figure out if Michael Orr did get a share of the movie profits. I would ask the Tuohys, if Michael Orr did not get a share of the profits, why not?
Yep.
Like, give me a reason why, if his agent and his lawyers dig into this story and they find out that not one penny went to him, why didn't you give him a penny? Why didn't you give him anything? It's basically your story, but it's his story too. Like, your kids shouldn't be getting any share of this. They were kind of in the movie, but there should be no question Michael Orr should have made money off this movie. You can't, and don't look, they were millionaires too. They were rich too. Don't give me that he got in the NFL and you're responsible for him getting in the NFL. That's hogwash. It's nonsense. But if it can be proven that Michael Orr didn't get a nickel, why didn't he get a nickel? Why did you keep it? And by the way, I know people think that they can hide this stuff. I know these people think they can get away with this stuff. It always ends up coming back. If the Tuohys made a decision not to give him money, you had to know at some point he was going to be older, more mature, wiser about finances, get with certain people, realize how big this movie is, cut the check. Wow, what a story. This is blown up. Absolutely blown up. And by the way, it ruins the image of a rather fine movie with Sandra Bullock in it. All right, hour two coming up next. Good, the Bad, and the Dumb, and we'll continue to look at the drop of the Arizona Cardinals next. Yes.